Succession number 28495, reel 14.
Albert Hughes, reel 14.
Right. The last operations flew by Formidable were something like 11th or 12th of August, and we did lose people on those operations. For some reason, possibly because damage to the aircraft, Formidable was due to withdraw about that time, and we ran into VJ Day, which have variously been described as the 14th or the 15th, depending on which part of the world you're in. But about that time, Formidable and two other carriers left the area to go back to Sydney, because all of them needed a significant amount of repairs, just leaving one aircraft carrier to stay with the battleship and be present at the surrender ceremony. It's of interest that the surrender ceremony took place on a battleship. Some people thought it should have taken place on an aircraft carrier. So did I. They couldn't have it on an aircraft carrier because they were still in operation. On the signing ceremony, all the aircraft carriers launched all their aircraft to fly over Tokyo in a mass demonstration of power. They couldn't spare one for the signing ceremony.
How did you feel with the war being over?
My first reaction was disappointment. Crazy. I was disappointed. I was doing something I liked. It's never going to happen to you. You're invincible. And the pre-war years of depression and unemployment were still vivid in my mind. My question was, what am I going to do now? And a lot of people thought the same.
So how did you fill that period, obviously, from VJ Day to your demobilisation? What were you involved in?
Well, VJ Day, we sailed straight back to Sydney, and the two aircraft carriers and three destroyers had a big triumphant entry into Sydney and a huge welcome. One carrier and her escort had been delayed for some reason. They came in later in the day. And, of course, Sydney was wide open. You know, we were welcome, open arms everywhere. Our aircraft carrier soon went into dry dock for servicing, and we were allowed to go on leave. And after a few days in Sydney, I wanted peace and quiet, and I went up to the Blue Mountains. I found the best hotel and signed into the best hotel in the Blue Mountains, and spent a few days down there until I thought I'd better go back to see if there are any instructions. We were then taken by train up to Maryborough, north of Brisbane, where our aircraft had flown. When we were coming south, we flew all the aircraft off while we were still towards the north of Australia, and these were all flown off to Maryborough. There were more pilots than aircraft, and I didn't have one to fly anyway, so I stayed behind, which meant I went on leave that much earlier anyway. So the train from Sydney took us north. You could put it into a Wild West film. The seats were wooden slats. I don't think it burnt wood, but it was smelly. The joints between the carriages were open platforms. You could probably get drinks of water on board, but no food. And every time it stopped for food, the Australians on board were the first there. There was a stampede to the food tables. We got enough, but we didn't know the ropes. So we were on the train, I think, about a couple of days, a couple of nights, before we got up to Maryborough. And the Corsairs were there. We were doing a little flying, but not seriously. And we were able to get a scrounge a truck and take a trip to the beach whenever we felt like it, and go sailing or swimming, whatever. We didn't know about box jellyfish, but I did know about sharks. And there's some times when I'd be the only man on a beach of a bay about 3 miles long, and I was the only one on it. I enjoyed it. I was rather sorry to leave, but eventually we had to hand in our courses because they were American on loan. So on they had to be flown down to Brisbane. So where are we now? My last flight in a Corsair was on the 14th of October. We flew from Maryborough to Archerfield near Brisbane. And we did the 150-mile trip, including takeoff and landing, and a flight over the city. We did it in 35 minutes. For once, we felt free to open it up for fun. And this was quite a big formation, see, we were pretty good at forming up. You see, the leader would take off and make a slow turn, and each one of us would make a slightly tighter turn. So by the time we'd all turned 180 degrees, we're in the formation. And once we were in formation, and the other squadrons were doing the same, we'd look at, right, open up the throttles, and we beat them. And, it was a nice way to go. But we were sorry to leave it. And we were flown back as passengers in Avenger aircraft. We flew the Avengers out with only the pilot. And we get half a dozen squashed into an Avenger to fly back. No parachutes and sitting on guns and things. That wasn't a pleasant experience. And that was the end of our flying.
So how did you return to the UK?
On the Andes. We... we called back to Sydney, and within a very short space of time we were told we were going to go on the Andes, which we'd travelled on before. So this time we were travelling on the top deck, first class. It was really luxurious. I'd accumulated a tremendous amount of luggage, including a huge tin trunk which I bought in Maryborough, you know, for tropical use, and about four kit bags and goodness knows what else. And I made sure all this stuff went on board earlier, so, which meant it came off last in England. We called up Fremantle just to have a quick look at it, and then when we set off across the Indian Ocean. And I could sunbathe all day across the tropics, which is now why I've got a sort of skin problem. And the dermatologist, when he first saw me, he smiled and said, "Oh yes," he said, "join the gang." He said, "You're a lot of keeping me busy." For that reason. So coming across, there wasn't anything especially exciting about it. And we got to Portsmouth and dumped on the train. My luggage filled one of these big platform trucks, and while it was there and a friend was waiting for his train, I nipped down to the Admiralty to ask what the score was for staying on, and they said, "Well, the best we can offer you is 4 years. We don't really know what we'd like after that." I hesitated. I decided I'd stay in science. Quite a number of my friends stayed on, and quite a number of them died as a result of that, because they went through the Korean War as well.
When were you released from service?
What was the date? In June, about the 26th of June. And of course I was on indefinite leave. Now, I mentioned this indefinite leave with the tape switched off, didn't I? Well, because I was on indefinite leave, I went to the technical college where I'd studied before to sign on in January. And the head of department, Harrison, a friend of mine, former school teacher, said, "I'm sorry, Albert, but I'll have to ask you to pay a late booking fee, and you have to complete this form which says you have to give a reason." So The fees themselves weren't too bad because I was coming back, I got reduced fees. But I had to pay this nominal sum, late booking fee, and I got a receipt. I should have framed it. And I made the most of writing out my reason for, about being in the Pacific and all that. I made the most of that. I should have made a photocopy of that as well. And I went home and told my father I'd been charged a late booking fee. And as senior alderman, chairman of just about everything in finance and chairman of higher education, and a former soldier in World War One, he hit the roof. So nobody else paid a late booking fee. I consider that was a bit of an honour.
Just really one last question now. How do you feel now about having served with the RAF and the Fleet Air Arm during the Second World War?
I feel comfortable about it, quite happy about it. I'm pleased that I did it. I can count my blessings, of course. You've got to be lucky. You've got to be fairly competent, obviously. It doesn't suffer feel gladly. But you also have to be lucky as well.